So, have you had a good lunch? Did you think of the kindness of the people who grew the food and cooked it and packaged it and offered it to us? Yeah, it's very nice when we can think of the kindness of others in that way. Then we really appreciate whatever we have. Yeah, we have a mind of wealth, a mind of gratitude, because we see actually that there's a lot of kindness all around us, and how much we depend on other sentient beings for everything that we have. So, I thought this session to start with some Q&A, and then we'll go into the discussion from there. Okay? So, a few questions. Okay, so if we receive others' adverse actions and behaviors, for example, their anger, their meanness, and so on, without reacting, but with gentle patience, does that generate or neutralize our own misdeeds? Okay. So when other people are, are mean or nasty to us, it's the result of our own destructive deeds. And then the challenge is, are we going to respond with getting angry and committing more destructive karma? Or are we going to respond, as this person's suggesting, with fortitude and just bearing the situation, having compassion for the other person, and not letting go, and letting go. Okay. So if we respond with more anger, then we perpetuate the situation, and we're experiencing the result of our own negativity, and then we're creating more negative karma. Yeah. If we, respond to the bad situation with compassion, without blaming the other person, it doesn't mean that we blame ourselves. It doesn't mean that we stuff our anger down and just be a victim. It means that we look at the situation in a totally different way, so that we release the anger. We don't respond with anger at all. And then we actually are creating virtue in that situation, even though we're experiencing the result of our own non-virtue. Okay, does that make sense? Yeah. So for example, when we get sick, some people, when they get sick, they get really angry and nasty and mean and complain. And so if we respond to sickness like that, then we create more negative karma for more problems later. If we respond to the sickness, for example, saying, this is a result of my own negative karma that I created under the influence of my own attachment, anger, and ignorance in the past, so there's nothing to be angry at outside of me, I just have to realize this is the result of my own actions. And if I don't like these actions, if I don't like these results, then I've got to stop committing the actions that cause them. And if we think like that, then our mind is calm right now, and we also are creating virtuous karma. Okay, so if the intentions are there, but for some reason the actions don't take place, something prevents us from acting on our intentions, are karmic imprints still present in the mind stream as a result of the intentions? There will be some karmic imprints left, but they won't be the karmic imprints of the action, because we don't do the action. So, for example, let's say I'm really mad at some colleague, and I'm thinking of what I can do to get revenge and what I'm going to say, and maybe talk behind his back in the office and ruin his reputation, something like that. But then, you know, I wind up not doing that because maybe he's sick on that day, or maybe he quits, you know, and doesn't come back to the office. So I don't actually talk badly about him and do the action that I had planned. So in that case, you know, there's no verbal non-virtue because I didn't criticize him and talk behind his back. However, there is the mental non-virtuous action of malice or ill will because I spent some time thinking about how I wanted to retaliate. Okay? So the mental karma usually is not as heavy as the verbal or physical karma, because like I was saying this morning, to do the actual action requires more effort than just thinking about it. But, you know, it's also good. Just sitting around and generating good intentions is very good, yeah? So when you're sick, instead of being bored, just, you know, if you lie in bed and you contemplate the four immeasurables, you know, really wishing others to have happiness and be free of suffering and so on, just by the power of your mental intention and you're cultivating that wish, that is putting good karmic seeds in your mind stream. Okay. In the same way, rejoicing at other people's good opportunities, rejoicing at their virtue, and even you're just sitting there not doing anything, you accumulate a lot of good karma by doing that. Okay. In fact, they say that rejoicing is the lazy person's way to create good karma. Because you don't need to do anything. You know, the other person's off doing whatever it is, you can just sit there and rejoice. Feel the change in your own minds, in your own mind, when you're able to rejoice at others' virtues and their opportunities. Okay, I want to donate a lot and practice generosity, but I remember my family who saves a lot to raise me in the past. Who saved a lot to raise me in the past. I feel guilty about spending money or giving it for donations when my family tries to save. What should I do? I would say if it's your own money, then you can use it as you wish, you know, and you create so much virtue when you're able to make donations and use it for charitable things. So you can create that virtue and then dedicate the merit from doing that for your family as well as for all other living beings. And that might actually act as a good example to your family to get them to think about being more generous. Okay? Of course, if your family has needs, and you're donating the money, but your family's hungry, then I would say take care of your family first and then donate the excess afterwards. But also just be aware that it's very difficult to please your family. Yeah. In fact, I might venture to say it's impossible. Yeah? Because, you know, we're with sentient beings, and sentient beings are never satisfied. So, you know, you have to look in your own mind, do what's virtuous, dedicate it, and sometimes let go of what other people think, what they want you to do. So how should you react to those who hurt your feelings in the past? My standard way is, they treated me so awful. Do you know that one? Poor me. Everybody hurts my feelings. Oh, but nobody treats me right. Oh, poor me. So that's one response. Yeah, it's a possible response. What are the results of responding like that? You're miserable. Other people are miserable. Another response is, you hurt my feelings. Who in the world do you think?
think you are. You have no right to talk to me that. No way to do that to me. You're awful, you're terrible, and besides, for the last 15 years, you've done this and this and this and this and this. And you bring up everything that they've done for the last 15 years. I'm screaming. Okay. So, you know the results that happen from doing that. Okay. It's an alternative. We can choose to do that. Does it really fulfill what we want? No. Okay. Another alternative is we acknowledge our feelings are hurt, but we do some research and ask ourselves, why were my feelings hurt? And it's very interesting what we come up with when we do this kind of internal questioning. Why were my feelings hurt? So you might come up with, well, because I feel insecure and I need that person's support and encouragement and praise to help me with my insecurity. And I didn't get it, so my feelings are hurt. Or maybe we look and we see, oh, my feelings are hurt because I really trusted that person. I told them something very personal that I don't tell many people. And then they, you know, used it against me in some way or another. So my feelings are hurt that way. Or it might be, my feelings are hurt because I thought that person was a friend and they went, you know, spoke negatively about me to somebody else. So that's just a sample of when we ask ourselves why my feelings were hurt. Now, what word did you hear in all those reasons for why my feelings are hurt? What word was there? What word did you hear? I trusted that person, they betrayed my trust. They spoke negatively about me behind my back. I need their encouragement. What word do you hear? I. Yeah. So there's some self-centeredness going on there, isn't there? Yeah. Me. What about me? I want. I need. I deserve. Me. Just happens to be the center of the universe. Yeah. As we get into Buddhist practice and we start really examining that me, you know, that self-centered thought, we begin to ask ourselves, is that self-centered thought my friend or my enemy? That mind that always interprets everything in terms of how it affects me, that mind that is very easily offended when people don't do what I want them to do, is that self-centered mind, is it looking out for my benefit or is it getting in the way of my happiness? Which one? What do you think? This is why Milarepa's like this. You know, he's waiting for the audience to answer a question. I'm joking. But, you know, we begin to see that this self-centered thought actually causes us a whole lot of suffering because it makes us super sensitive to everything everybody else does because we interpret everything in terms of how it affects me. Even though there's over 7 billion human beings on this planet and trillions of insects, we interpret everything in terms of how it affects. affects one person, who just coincidentally is me. Okay? So we can begin to see how this self-centeredness makes us miserable. So I'm not saying that we don't deserve happiness. I'm not saying that. And I'm not saying we ignore our feelings. And I'm not saying we neglect ourselves. Okay. What I am saying is that when we focus on ourselves in a self-centered way, we wind up more unhappy. So I find it helpful when my feelings are hurt, if I look and I see that there's some self-centeredness behind it, then I remind myself, you know, this is due to that self-centered attitude, which is my enemy. And that self-centered attitude, anyway, is the one who made me do whatever negative actions I did in the past that brought about this situation in which my friend is hurting my feelings. So the self-centered thought is really not something to listen to. Yeah, let's put it down. Then sometimes the self-centered thought, it doesn't let go very easily. It says, bah, 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 bah. They hurt your feelings. They had no reason to speak to you like that. And you go, yeah, they did hurt my feelings. I'm mad. You know? And then you have to say, okay, well, what happens if I act out my anger? What's the result of that? I go and I tell that person off and I scream at them because they hurt my feelings. Or I go and I cry and create a scene because they hurt my feelings. Is that going to unhurt my feelings? Are my feelings going to be less hurt because I hurt somebody else's feelings or get mad at them? No. Yeah. It doesn't make me stop hurting anymore. It gives me a false sense of power because I'm angry. But it doesn't really reduce my pain. So if it doesn't reduce my pain, what use is it? And in addition, it's just going to increase my problems and make me more unhappy. So then there's one meditation that we do called the taking and giving meditation, where we imagine taking on others' suffering and giving them our happiness. And then I do that meditation. And I think, my feelings are hurt. May I take on the hurt feelings that other beings have? Because I'm not the only one in this planet right now who has hurt feelings. Yeah. Because don't most of us have hurt feelings at one time or another? And lots of people with hurt feelings. So may I take on their suffering? Yeah, as long as I'm unhappy. May I take on their suffering? And may I give them my happiness? Yeah. And the people who hurt my feelings, they did it because they were confused, probably because they were hurt themselves. Or they were in pain themselves. So may I wish them well instead of wanting to hurt them back. May I wish them well. And then think about the four measurables. Okay. So these are ways to help us feel better right now, but also these ways help us transform our mind so that we don't create more non-virtue that will be the cause of more suffering. Okay, so somebody's asking if I would repeat the four points about karma. First one is karma is definite. Okay, happiness only comes from virtue, never non-virtue. Unhappiness only comes from non-virtue, never virtue. one. Second one is a big result can come from a small cause, a small action. Third one, if you don't create the cause, you don't experience the result. And then fourth one, the karma will ripen unless we counteract it. So counteracting destructive karma by doing purification, or counteracting virtue, which we don't want to do, but it happens if we get angry or generate wrong views. So you mentioned that there is no soul, no self, but karma follows us however many lives. Okay? Is that itself a self? No, karma is not a self. Karma is just seeds. They rise and disappear. Okay? And there doesn't need to be a self that carries the seeds. I think the example of a river can be very helpful. Yeah, Singapore doesn't have a lot of rivers. Maybe there's the Geylang Canal.
I heard
there's a Singapore River, isn't there? Where is it? I don't think I've ever seen it. Where's the Singapore River? Anyway, how about the Mississippi? It's a big river in my country. Okay, big river. Yeah. So, if you look, the Mississippi River starts up in the northern part of the country, very close to Canada. And it flows south, and it ends way down in the Gulf of Mexico. Yeah. So, it's over 2,000 miles, you know, that this river flows. So we have one name, the Mississippi. But what really is the Mississippi River? Is it the river when it's up in the north towards Canada, when it's just a very small river? Is it the river when it goes by Iowa, when it's getting bigger? Is it the river when it is in the Mississippi Delta going into the Gulf of Mexico? If we look for what is the Mississippi River, can you indicate one area that is the river where other areas are not? Or can you indicate one thing that is the Mississippi River? Is the river the water, or is it the banks, the guide where the water flows? Or is the river the current of the water? Yeah. What actually is the river? When we investigate like this, we can't really come up with one thing that we can say, this is the Mississippi River. All we see when we really analyze is there's dirt, a lot of sand, a lot of sediment. There's water that's flowing, and the water is constantly changing, isn't it? And more water falling into it when it rains, some water evaporating when it goes through the hot areas. So we can't find anything that is the river. Yet, we talk about the Mississippi River. Okay? So when we talk about the self, it's kind of like that. We can't isolate anything that we are. And yet this continuity that flows. Okay? When you drop a leaf on the Mississippi River upstream near Canada, that leaf flows down all the way 2,000 miles to the Gulf of Mexico, unless somebody pulls the leaf out or it disintegrates. Okay? But the leaf even as it's flowing, it's changing all the time, isn't it? It's not a permanent leaf, it's always changing. So in the same way, the leaf is like an action we did at one point of time. Time continues, the self continues, the mind continues, changing, changing, changing every moment. The karmic imprint also changing every moment. And then at some point, you know, maybe like the leaf, it gets taken out because somebody did purification. Maybe it disintegrates because it just got worn out. Maybe by our doing some other kind of purification. But otherwise, the leaf is going to arrive at, you know, at the southern bank at some point. Okay? So it's like that. There doesn't need to be a self or soul that carries the karma. And in fact, if there were a permanent self, or there were a permanent soul that was the one that held the karma, then the karma actually wouldn't be able to be transmitted from one life to the next. Because a permanent soul cannot change. Yeah. If I had a permanent soul that never changed, then how could I be born in another life? Because being born in another life involves change. Okay? So it's not only that we don't need a permanent soul to talk about the continuity of karma, but if there were a permanent soul, then karma couldn't continue at all. It would be impossible. Okay, so if a parent berates his child in the hope of bettering the little kid, the act is unwholesome, but the intention is kind. So does that create good or bad karma? Okay, so there's several points I want to comment on in the question. If a parent berates a child, I recommend not berating your kids. Telling your kids they're stupid, they can't do anything right, that they're a disaster, that doesn't give them any useful information. It only makes them feel like something is wrong with them and destroys their self-esteem. Okay. But if you tell your children the specific action that they did that you don't like, that gives them some useful information. When you leave your room as a mess, it's hard for me because I can't walk across the room without tripping. Or I like to have a clean house, and when the room is a mess, it gives me a bad feeling, you know. If you tell your child what the specific thing is that you don't like, then they know what behavior to change. But if you just berate them and tell them they're a bad person, that doesn't help them know how to change. It just makes them feel, it makes them lose their confidence. Okay? And that can be very damaging to a child. In the same way, when you praise your child, you know, tell them the action they did that you really like, because that helps them know how their actions influence people, and because they want to help, what they want you to do. Oh, when you helped us clean up, I really appreciated it, because then we all share in cleaning up. Then the child knows something. If you just say, oh, you're a wonderful child, kid doesn't know. What did I do that was wonderful? Yeah. Okay. Then, so that's just one comment about that. Then, okay, so if you, let's say, change it from berate, if you tell the child in very straightforward terms, you know, don't do that action again, it's dangerous. Okay, and you have to speak strongly to the child, because it's a little kid, and if you don't speak strongly, they won't even think that what you're saying is important. Okay. Do you have to be angry to speak strongly to your child? No. Yeah, you're speaking because you care about the child. If you're angry and that's why you speak strongly, then that's negative. But if you're doing it out of compassion and care, because it's part of your responsibility to teach the child how to behave well in society, then, you know, even though you're speaking strongly, it's a virtuous action. Okay? Because your intention is kind. Okay? So don't confuse the action with the intention. Yeah. Strong action doesn't mean a bad intention. Weak action does not mean a benevolent intention. Okay. So, certainly, not all experiences are caused by karma. 1/4 of the world population is born into extreme poverty. Is this karma? I think they mean, is this the result of karma? Gender inequality. Some women suffer simply because they are women. This can't be caused by karma. Culturally, a lot of people are doing a lot of things to cleanse, in quotation marks, their karma. For example, making donations to temples with the intention to save oneself from past karma. What is your advice for this? I think when we are born into poverty, yeah, being born into poverty is the result of our harmful karma in previous lives. Yeah. Being born into an oppressed population, whether you're women or the, you know, the Rohingya or, you know, any kind of oppressed population, is a result of our karma. That does not mean we deserve to suffer. Repeat, that does not mean we deserve to suffer. It simply means that we're experiencing the result of our own actions. That also does not mean that we let social structures continue to be unfair like that. Yeah. When there's inequality in income and 1/4 of the world's population is in poverty, something is wrong. We don't just say, oh, well, it's their karma, they're so poor. Too bad, you know, I'm going to the disco tonight, I'm going out to eat, I have a nice house. I don't care about them because that's just their karma. What kind of horrible, callous, uncompassionate attitude is that? Yeah? That kind of attitude is creating negative karma for oneself, not to receive help when we need it. Okay? So karma, the law of karma and its effects, cannot be used to justify unhealthy social structure. It cannot be used to justify injustice. Okay? When there's corrupt social structures, when there's injustice, when people suffer unfairly, we need to speak up and change the situation. We don't just say, well, that's their karma. Yeah. I mean, if on your way home tonight, you know, maybe you're crossing the street and you get hit by the car and you're lying in the middle of Bukatima bleeding, you know, and somebody walked by and said, oh, what a pity, that's your karma. You know, might help you if I take you to the hospital on interfering with your karma. Yeah? You can see this is totally ridiculous. Yeah. And so in the same way as gender inequality, so is the unfair distribution of wealth on this planet. Yeah. These things we need to work as together as a compassionate society to overcome. Then as for the people making donations to save themselves from past karma, you know, it depends. If people have sincere regret for the negativities they've done in their life, and they genuinely want to purify, and they have a determination not to do the action again, then there's many kinds of remedial behaviors we do to purify. And one of them is giving donations to a charity, to a temple, you know, anything that benefits others. So if we have a good intention and we regret and we want to change our behavior, then that, you know, making a donation to whoever, that's a virtuous action and that acts to purify. If you have the thing of, well, I cheat people in a business deal, and I guess I should purify, but I have this upcoming business deal, and I want to do the same thing, because then I get a lot of extra money. Well, just for, you know, the sake of it, I'll give a donation to the temple or to the, you know, library or whatever. Does that person have a good intention? No, they're not really sorry for what they did. They intend to do it again. Yeah. So it's a completely different ballgame with that person. Okay, so I have a very short temper. I often generate bad karma by saying hurtful things to others when I get angry. When I get angry, there is so much bad energy created within me that I let it out at others. So what can I do to diminish this bad energy generated within me when something or someone makes me angry? Okay. First of all, let me comment on the wording of that statement. Yeah, before I answer the question directly. And I think a number of people probably could have written this question. Yeah. Anybody else have a bad temper here besides the person who wrote the question? Okay, so, you know, we do, don't we? So, we say, someone made me angry. Something made me angry. Does someone really make you angry? I'm questioning our way of thinking here. Does someone make me angry? Someone comes up to me and, you know, right here, let's say, in the middle of the class here, that's it. Dudrin, you're a ridiculous, stupid Dharma teacher. What are you doing sitting up there in the front of the class? You don't know anything! Then, if I get angry because somebody says that, did they make me angry? Did they make me angry? The words are coming out of their mouth. You're a total idiot. You don't know anything. What in the world are you doing? The words are coming out of their mouth. Those sound waves. Coming up the central aisle, do you see those sound waves? They hit my ear. Then, what is it, sterile and anvil, you know, vibrating. Then there's some nerve that hooks in, you know, and that takes it up to some location of the brain. And then, you know, my brain knows sound. Is that sound? Yeah? What is that sound? Is that sound mean? Is it cruel? Does that sound make me angry? Yeah. It's just sound waves, isn't it? Just sound waves. And it's not just me hearing sound. It's I hear the sound. Then I impute meaning on those sounds. Then my mind, there's a mental factor called inappropriate attention that begins to make up a story. Hey, wait a minute, that person's insulting me in front of a whole group of people. I can't stand it. They're making me look bad in front of people. If I have a bad reputation, nobody will ever come to any of my Dharma teachings again. I'm so mad. Okay. Did they make me mad? Who made me mad? My own inappropriate attention and the seed of anger that exists within. Because of that, I interpreted their words to have a certain meaning. And I then, you know, that self-centered thought that I was talking about before, it really came up strong. I don't want to look bad for the whole group of people that's going to ruin this and this and this and this. So I better get angry. All of that came from me. So saying they made me mad is really not accurate. It isn't like anger was riding on top of those sound waves. You know, the virus of anger. There's the sound waves on top of them surfing. There's the virus of anger. And then it hits my ear and I got the virus, so I got angry. It's not like that. Because I have the seed of anger inside me because I have self-centeredness inside me, then I get angry. Nobody makes me angry. I always have a choice of what to feel. If I say they make me angry, as it's like I'm saying I have no choice about what I feel. But I do have choice. If I pay attention, remember that mindfulness and introspective awareness? If those two are present, then I have a choice. If somebody starts coming up this aisle and insulting me in front of all of you, I can think, wow, that person's really out of control. You know, they're suffering at this moment. Because people who, you know, somebody who's feeling okay is not going to scream out in the middle of a Dharma talk. Yeah. So that person's suffering. What's happening? How can I help them? There's also the option that I think like that. Isn't there? I don't have to get mad. So does that answer the question? Okay. What, you know, if you have a hot temper? Again, you know, I find it very useful with my temper to ask myself, why do I get angry? You know? And it's always they. You. He, she. It's never my responsibility. as long as I make my anger somebody else's responsibility, I am disempowering myself. Because if it's somebody else's fault, because they made me angry, that means I can't do anything about my anger. They have to change before I can stop being angry. That's a victim mentality, and that's giving up my own power. It's also not being responsible for my own emotions. But if I look at my temper, it's my responsibility. Yeah? And my temper makes me suffer, and it makes others suffer. So I'm going to do a daily meditation practice and really contemplate the meditations that the Buddha taught for how to overcome anger. If you don't know what those meditations are, last Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, I gave some talk at Pure Land. We'll put the videos up. There's also a book called Working with Anger. There's another book called Transforming Adversity into Joy and Courage. Another one called Don't Believe Everything You Think. And they all in there talk about how to deal with anger. So you read that and then you think about it. You really try and apply it to yourself. At first it's difficult because our self-centered thought can be very strong. But as we gradually begin to chip away at our self-centered thought, you know, and our arrogance, our pride goes down, then it becomes easier, you know, to just let go of the anger and the temper. Because we realize, you know, I don't need to be right all the time. I don't need to have the last word all the time. So please explain what is collective karma. What type of conditions are required for collective karma to be effective? So collective karma is the karma that we create together as a group when the group is formed for a specific reason and we agree with that reason. Okay? So, for example, today we all came together to have a retreat. I think people's intention was virtuous. You wanted to come to become a better person, to learn things so that you can become kinder and release your ignorance, anger, and attachment. And we came together for that purpose. Yeah. So we're creating karma together as a group because we formed together as a group with a good intention. And everybody shared that intention. It's a virtuous intention, so we create virtuous collective karma. That karma will ripen in us experiencing some pleasant or happy situation together. Right now, we're all in Singapore together with many other beings. And being in Singapore, you know, in general, it's a very wealthy country, it's a peaceful country, there's a lot of good fortune here. Yeah. So it's a result of good karma we created together. That's collective karma. The result is experienced collectively. Having said that, at the same time as we're creating collective karma, we're also creating individual karma. Okay? So we're all came for a virtuous purpose. But one person may be sitting there saying, wow, this is really interesting. And I want to work on my anger now with this. It's really pointing out to me how I need to work on myself. And I have some determination to do it now. And I'm really, you know, I'm up for that. So one person may be thinking like that. Another person sitting here in the same room might be thinking, it's 2:30. I want to take a break. Why doesn't she shut up already? My knees hurt, my back hurts. I want to go do something else. Okay? So those two people are, on an individual level, are creating very different karma, aren't they? According to what they're thinking at that moment. Okay? So at the same time we create collective karma, we can also create individual karma. Now, let's say that we belong to a group that we didn't choose to belong to, and that group is doing something non-virtuous that we don't like. Okay, for example, I live in the U.S., and the U.S. is dropping bombs and killing people. I don't agree with that. Just because I'm an American citizen and the country's policy is acting in that way, that doesn't mean that I create the karma of killing simply because of my affiliation with that group, because I do not agree with the policy of that group. Okay? So I'm not creating the karma of killing. However, yeah, I'm going off the topic of collective karma, but into the topic of rejoicing. When we rejoice at the karma of other people, we create a similar kind of karma. So if, you know, when the U.S. drops bombs and you rejoice, oh boy, good they killed those people, then, you know, you're having anger, you're rejoicing and killing. If after the terrorist attacks in Paris, you said, oh good, that terrorist attack is really good, then you're rejoicing at somebody's non-virtue, you're creating non-virtue. Okay, so we have to be careful what we rejoice about. And we also have to be careful what groups we join and what are the purposes of those groups. So let's not join any groups where the purpose is to harm and damage other people. But let's join groups where the purpose is to help people create kindness and compassion and generosity and friendship. Okay. Now you might say, well, what about going to a soccer? You go to a soccer match, and soccer matches get violent, don't they? I don't think in Singapore, but boy, in UK, I mean, they have brawls and fights and everything at soccer matches. So I think there, just going to a soccer match is probably neutral. But if you join in a fight, or if you rejoice in somebody else fighting in the soccer match, then you're creating negative karma. If you don't join in deliberately, and if you really like are non-violent, then you're not creating that karma. So during rebirth, how does the stream of consciousness select the next earth parents? Is there a matching of karma here? For example, beings with similar karma are placed together. So, how do our next parents, assuming we're going to be reborn as human beings, how does that happen? Well, I'll tell you how it doesn't happen. Okay. We're not sitting up there on a cloud, looking down, saying, I wonder who I want to be my mom and dad. You know, I'm taking applications now. Please apply here, and I'll see if I select you or not. It's not like that, okay? when we are sentient beings under the influence of ignorance, attachment, anger, you know, our minds are not very controlled. Yeah. And so whatever looks good in the moment, we jump for it. Yeah. And some karma is ripening, you know, some at the end of the previous life, yeah, when craving and clinging arise in our mind, that causes some karma to ripen. And that karma, as it's ripening, makes us attracted to a different kind, a certain body, a certain realm. And then there's still other karma, yeah, cooperative condition kind of karma, that influences us within that realm. Like, let's say there's karma to be born as a human being, that's ripening. But then within that, there's the karma to be reborn as the child of certain parents. Yeah. Then, you know, all these different karmas are ripening at that time. And then the mind is attracted to certain parents, and the consciousness, you know, goes into the fertilized egg. And then the next rebirth begins at that point. The great bodhisattvas, the people who have direct realization of emptiness, the nature of reality, who have, you know, are beginning to eliminate their afflictions and defilements, those beings can have some choice about where to be reborn. Okay. But the rest of us, you know, it's like some impulsive thing comes in the mind and you go for it. Yeah. So that's why, you know, at the time of death, it's so important. Keep the room peaceful. Don't do anything to annoy the person or make a strong negative emotion arise in them. Remind them of the Dharma. Remind them of their own virtuous actions. Because this will act as fertilizer for their constructive karmic seeds.